Hello, and welcome to the First Issue Club podcast. We are your weekly reading club for comic books of the first issue variety. We're going to onboard you into those new stories. Stories that make your eyes water. Stories that fill your heart. You made me break character because you started laughing.
Somehow.
I'll skip it.
Are we going for the Oscar for best Cal McCoy
kind
intro?
Of. I'm in an Oscar move. On the Patreon we just recorded, we went through and picked some of our Oscar faves for the few categories that we were familiar with. So,
Justice for Godzilla minus one.
Thank you. Somehow Godzilla feels good in a place like this.
That's right. That's right, Godzilla. You're a fave. Okay, we've got a lot of first issues to talk about this week.
Yep.
We didn't get our hands on Ronin
Turtles
2, so we're not going to be covering that one. We'll probably talk about it on a future episode or a Patreon.
Or not at all.
Or, yeah, who knows? We'll see.
I'll do it next week.
If everyone's clamoring for it, we'll do it.
If our email inbox is just bursting. But where's the Ronin?
A lot of other good first issues came out this week, and we're going to highlight some of those things that everyone else isn't already covering. So that's a good way to look at it, right?
Yeah. You come here for shit that people don't talk about.
Yeah, exactly. You have refined tastes in paper. Okay, comic book news, then the reading club portion.
Sure.
Did anyone come to the table with any news they saw? Or excited for?
I know that the Kickstarter just dropped for Daniel Warren Johnson's Extremity.
Ooh,
there is some contention.
At least on our Discord there was.
Yes.
Let's talk through some of that. What are your thoughts?
It's a bit of a coin flip of if you're excited for it or not excited for it. There is a price barrier for sure. Mm-hmm. And the consensus on the Discord is that for the price and what you're getting, there's some confusion of why it's such a high price for this seemingly just like a bigger formatted version of a hardcover that already is in existence.
Yeah.
So that's mainly where the harumphs are coming from.
Let me give you my take, because I think I've been sitting on the opposite side of the fence.
Go for it.
Okay. I think Kickstarter is the perfect place to put a weird specialty book that is one massive.
It's gigantic.
It's recreating, it's reproductions of the original line work from the entire series of Extremity.
Yeah.
Full size, full color prints, even though they're black and white line work. They're doing actual full color scans throughout the book just so you can get the real vibe and impression for what the print, the original pages looked like. I think there are huge Daniel Warren Johnson fans, and the amount of support the Kickstarter is getting goes to show you how many people are like, love his art so much that this product kind of speaks to them.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's cool for a publisher like Skybound to be like, we're doing this weird thing on the Kickstarter. We're not just going to do the normal omnibus of this, make you pay a shit ton for it, and then release it later. Like, this is a specialty niche thing for specialty people who want to make this thing happen.
Right.
So, I just wanted to get that out of the way. I think this is the sort of thing that belongs on Kickstarter. Two, he's being such a popular artist, his original artwork is
flying off the shelves,
getting more and more expensive, and it's so difficult to get your hands on. Every time they do a release, he's one of those like artists represented by Felix, and as soon as they do a release, his art is gone.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where sometimes he's got like hire, I don't know, people who make like
a lot of money.
Like 7-8 figures who are just buying issues complete before they even make it to a general audience, right? So the idea of being like for less than half of the price of one original page, you're getting an entire 12-issue series of
high quality
reproductions of just tons of original Daniel Warren Johnson pages.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a cool thing to just like love and appreciate his artwork and see some of the process of Extremity and get the idea for like the weight of a full page. And if you have a favorite page that you want to frame and put on your wall, pull your X-Acto knife out and frame that bad boy, and it'll look just like the original page, right?
And only you will know that is a reproduction.
Yeah, exactly right.
Especially if you draw over it.
So I thought that was cool. I think the value really plummets beyond the first tier of saying, like, here's a huge 11x17 book that's probably going to weigh like 10 pounds.
Yeah. Shipping is $800.
It's the book itself is $150. Mm-hmm. And then shipping's at least $20.
Right.
The next tier up is $250. And you get a secondary mini book that's like, here's some more process stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I feel like a lot of people feel like, well, this is my chance to get it. I'm already $150 in. I might as well go all in. That little book by itself is not worth $100 extra. I get the 11x17 thing being like, that's a $150 book. If you get that on any other publisher, that is like a huge prestige collection.
Does it come with a signature though? I think the 250 may get a
I don't believe it does.
Wow. Okay.
Or maybe it comes with like a book plate that's signed. I don't think the book itself is signed.
Okay. Interesting.
I saw $150 and I was like, nope.
Yeah.
But like Mike was saying, this is a specialty thing where like this goes on your coffee table.
For people with special interests.
Yeah. And this is for like people who have like Murder Falcon tattoos.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
This is like for the diehards.
Because if they make this book and in mass quantity and put it out there, it's too niche for most audiences to buy something like this.
Yeah. It'll be a cargo largo and gear.
I like when they do the made to order and the creator gets a good chunk of that because they're not losing their ass on like a normal size book run, especially for something like this that would just be like so expensive to make.
Good point. Good points all around.
I don't know. Yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
I think that's a healthy way to look
at
it.
Yeah, if it's not for you, it's not for you.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't poo-poo it because it does seem like...
Because
to me, like the price for what it is seems like that's what things like that cost to me.
Well, like hardcovers already exist. Deluxe hardcovers already exist for Extremity. Mm-hmm. And if that's your cup of tea, it's available to you.
And this book, you can't get this book being like, I want to read Extremity and this is the way to do it. There's no text in this. It is just the original artwork.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a write your own story situation.
Right.
Really, sure. Like,
that's
what
why Greg's getting it.
Yeah, like, what do you want these characters to say? And it's just a bunch of fart noises. I write myself into the story.
I thought it was funny that was like, there's a thing on Felix where they're like, hey, if you're doing the $250 tier and you're a member of the newsletter, you'll get a free enamel pin if you check this box that says you're a member of our mailing list. And it's just like, what an incentive.
Yeah. Ooh la la.
Get a $5 enamel pin after spending the $250 to get the book and then a mini book with it. The upper tiers are kind of out of control, but
gee whiz, at that, with that enticiveness, I'll buy two of them.
All right. Any other news from you guys?
Extremity was the big one that I saw. I've been focusing on Planet this week, to be honest.
Yeah, we got a Comic-Con coming up. We talked about that mostly on the Patreon.
Yeah.
So hop over there if you want to hear our takes on it.
Did you guys see Zack Snyder's...
He was on Rogan.
Ice cold take on Batman.
Yeah. Can you talk a little more about that? I don't have the specifics because I didn't hear too much, but I saw some headlines.
Yeah, so Zack Snyder Cut Snyder... was on Joe Rogan. Sorry, Zach Guardians of Gahool.
Guardians
Snyder
of Gahool.
Was on
you
Joe
should,
Rogan.
You should name your son Snyder.
Already know.
Middle name Cut.
Okay.
Santa Cut Vargas.
You got me back in. Because then the baby shower theme can be released the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. That's too good.
3 more months till we release the Snyder Cut.
And it'll be a big disappointment, just like the original.
Oh.
No.
The kid will be born with a fedora.
Dude. But he will be born a virgin, so. Yeah.
Mother, I think my katana's still in there.
Mother, Matendis are still...
Milady.
Jesus. Fuck. Zack Snyder said that DC is wasting Batman unless they allow him to kill.
The doy? Like, it's, dude, you do not understand the character at all.
It's so, no. So bad.
The more I hear of Zack Snyder's opinion on things like this, the more it's like, I don't think he's actually a comic book reader or fan.
No.
I think he's one of these like basic bitch people who,
yeah, he's a Michael Bay,
read The Dark Knight and are just like, that rules.
Yeah,
he's a fucking alpha male, bro. Like,
yeah, he's so into the like power fantasy version,
yeah,
of comics. And I don't know. Those sort of movies don't resonate with people I like, I guess, is how I'll put it.
Like,
it's just, it's such a bad take specifically about the character when you're like, hey, the thing that defines the character should be thrown out the window.
In my movies, Warner Brother made me cut out that Batman listened to Jordan Peterson podcasts.
Well, so that's the, this... That take that he had is just adding on to the pile of shit that he's already said about Batman.
Sure.
Do you guys remember when he said, in my world, Batman could go to prison and be raped?
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
You didn't... Yes, he said that.
What a weird detail to throw in.
Yeah, what sort of
to the mythos
context validates that sort of comment? That
nothing!
So fucking weird
it's
to say.
It's so bad. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what makes Batman interesting. He doesn't understand what makes comic book characters interesting.
Also, that doesn't relate to the character at all. It's
just one of those things that it's like person gets off on dark, gritty, hyper violence.
Yeah.
Because it's the real world, Mike.
And people stealing power from other people or having power over other people.
Yeah. In my original version, Alfred was going to be a pedophile who was...
None of it is about doing good. It's all about power.
Yeah. He completely missed the point that, like...
Power and violence.
Yeah. That killing is the easy way out for Batman, and he's purposefully rejecting it. It's not that Batman can't kill... It's that he's above that.
Yeah.
And he completely does not understand that.
It's like, yes, Zach, it would be easier if Batman could kill. And it would also be easier if I could punch my son in the face when he spills a drink on the floor.
Yeah.
But I don't because I'm above it.
Exactly. And
like, I'm trying to be a good example.
Yeah. It just is so bad. I'm so glad we're done with all that fucking nonsense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Bring on the cuck James Gunn to do the proper
SJW Batman.
Love
here we
it.
Come.
Yes.
The last movie
Spider-Man,
I watched.
Or Superman's a soy boy. Let's do this.
The last movie I watched was Aquaman 2.
Oh, give us a 2-second review.
That just came out on HBO Max.
Nailed it.
It was one of the movies of all time.
I heard it didn't make a lot of sense because a lot of the Amber Heard stuff had to be cut out.
Yeah.
So it looked like Aquaman was a single parent for a lot of that movie.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. They sidelined her pretty hard, but it was not good,
even
like
with
regardless.
That. Yeah.
Patrick Wilson deserves better. I'll say that. Jason Momoa deserves better. He's a charismatic man.
He should be Lobo.
I would kiss him.
I think that James Gunn would do a disservice to not use him as a Lobo character. What are we talking about now?
Staying on movies, I did see that the Juggernaut actor, Vinnie Jones, did you see this?
Uh-huh.
Got offered a role in Deadpool 3, and he said he was just like, the costume was so big. It was so physically and mentally straining because once they put you in it, mm-hmm. you cannot get out of it all day and you can't move. So you're just like trapped in a suit where people are bringing you things and you're just eating through straws all day long at the whim of other people. And he was just like, never again.
Yeah. Nah, mate.
Yeah, he said they couldn't afford to put me in the suit.
Yeah. Like, think about how much it would... I love that.
Yeah.
You think about how many people are just like, yes, put me in these new huge superhero yeah. movies. And it's just like such a good, easy paycheck. But he was just like, not easy for me.
Yeah.
You try to put me in that suit again? No way.
Well, ask Alan Cumming how he felt about being Nightcrawler. And he'll tell you the same shit. Ask yeah. Rebecca Romijn. About how she feels about being covered in blue paint and naked yeah, all day.
Yeah, that'd be awful.
Wasn't he in Snatch, that character, the
yeah.
actor?
Yeah.
Was he character. Like,
was he a bullet? was Juggernaut in Snatch? Juggernaut
showed up in Snatch, yeah.
He was Bullet Tooth, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take a dog.
I also saw that Kirsten Dunst did an interview and said she's open to doing more comic book movies. I think this is something you're finding about a lot of actors who are like, it's nice to do the pet projects, mm-hmm. but it's also really nice to get a massive paycheck mm-hmm. and do something that's like a huge, yeah. like fans love it and people remember you for those things if you find the right project.
Was that the same interview where she said she took 2 years off from acting because all she was offered was sad moms? I'm pretty sure that was Kirsten Dunst yeah. that said that.
But I don't know if there's anything that off the top of your guys' heads that you're just like, it'd be cool to see Kirsten Dunst do this, that, or the other. Or even if it's like, does she play like an older version of Mary Jane? You know, you wonder if she'd even come back to doing that.
So I've heard a lot of rumors. Like, what's his name? The guy who played Sandman? In Spider-Man 3.
Mm-hmm. The guy from Wings.
Yeah. Yep, sure. He said that he is pretty sure that they're going to do Spider-Man 3. Like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, or Spider-Man 4, sorry.
Okay.
Sam Raimi's yeah, Spider-Man 4.
With Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
And I think it would be so cool if they did Spider-Man Reign, adapted that story. Where it's like,
okay, it's either going to be Rain or Renew Your Vows.
Yeah, like way in the future, yeah. you know. Yeah, Renew Your Vows would be great. Where they're married and have Mayday.
Have a kid, yeah.
I think they should just leave it alone. It's getting a little complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Sony's easy way to do a Spider-Man movie, just like, hey, listen, we own the.
Well, yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like these every. Spider-Man Sony movie has been so bad at this point that it's like maybe they should have just stuck to doing like, hey, we're gonna do our own Spider-Man movies, and we've established its own universe and it's a separate thing going on over here. If you can convince Tobey Maguire, or even like they could have done a Doc Ock movie and like mm-hmm. use someone that we knew who was cast already in one of those movies to come in and build the story out of it. I don't know.
Sam Raimi, Spider-Man Reign. Every Oscar.
Okay, I saw X-Men Life Death is part of the X-Men 97 animated series. So uh-huh. two of the episodes are called Life Death with like a subtitle, which if you remember the comics, which are like in the 180s, 190s.
Oh, with Storm and Forge.
Yeah, Storm and Forge. It's a love story between Storm and Forge, and they're like painted covers. Yeah.
They're kind of odd.
Is it Death, Life Death, and Death Life? Like,
I think
it's something like that.
Are they swamped? I thought they were both called Life Death.
Oh, maybe. You might be right. You're probably right.
Something like that.
I'm going to trust the X-Men guy.
The expert.
I've always loved those covers. They just like jump out and mm-hmm. they're very cool looking. Classic story.
Forge and his little mustache.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of like superhero love stories, and that's I think one of the more iconic ones. So
I think people forget about it.
Oh, people definitely forget about it. I think you tell people to say like, who are Storm's love interests, and they say
Black Panther.
Black Panther, and then they're like, Duh. Is that it?
Herself?
That's just because she married Black Panther.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. I'm saying that's like the more mainstream of her relationships. But this was, I think, a really big thing for fans for a long time to see, like, oh, it's like, you know, you think you can't do something like a love story in comics, and then they hit you with one and people love it, and then you didn't get another thing like that until Gambit and Rogue, like 100 issues later.
Yeah. Kitty and Cyclops.
Kitty and Cyclops.
Not Kitty.
Jean and Cyclops.
Colossus.
Yeah, Kitty and Colossus.
Kitty and Colossus. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. What we got there.
Wow.
What arc would you guys like to see? Real quick. What arc would you like to see adapted for X-Men 97? Like X-Men 97 season 2.
Which one's the one with the Morlocks mutant agenda?
Yeah.
I think that'd be dope. With
And they did a bunch of Morlock stuff in the original series,
right? Did they? I can't recall if they already have done.
Yeah, they did Brood stuff in the original series.
Executioner's Song.
Yeah.
That one would be cool.
That would be really cool.
That's the first one that jumps out to me. Because Executioner's Song was a huge part of my X-Men journey.
Yeah.
Because my cousin Justin was really into X-Men, and like that's how he introduced me to X-Men with that stuff. And I was like, holy shit, like this is next level heady shit.
So I know a big part of one of the big villains in the X-Men animated series was Mr. Sinister.
Mm-hmm.
But did they ever do Madeline Pryor?
They did Mystique.
I don't think they did Madeline Pryor.
Inferno?
I think that would be an interesting thing to do now.
Inferno would be cool.
Well,
because in the promo stuff, Jean's pregnant.
Who?
Madeline Pryor, was she Inferno?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
She was.
I would love to see them do Necrozha. Jumping like way
like
forward.
In Genosha?
Yeah, where Celine brings all those mutants back to life.
Oh, and then kills them?
Well, they're already dead and she brings them back with that virus. No? I'm the only one that read
early
2000s X-Men?
No, you're right. I'm trying to think.
Is it Necrozha?
Yeah.
Genosha is the place.
Genosha is the island. Yeah. Correct.
And didn't they drop a bomb on it to kill all the Necrotians?
No. So that is the beginning of Grant Morrison's new X-Men, is the decimation of Genosha.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Necrozha.
Uh-huh.
And that's like...
That's one I'm not as familiar with.
That's like the X-Force tie-in stuff.
Okay.
Where Celine is like taking over the world with this band of like undead X-Men.
Yeah.
So like Cypher comes back from the dead.
Okay. That's
cool.
And I
think that would be cool.
Yeah, totally.
It'd be like a lot darker.
Yeah.
But you could bring in like those other weird, that stuff.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't look familiar at all to me. I missed this era.
Necrozha is a 2009-10 comic book crossover published by Marvel Comics.
This was a Mike was very poor era.
In the storyline, Celine decides to utilize the techno-organic virus's power to bring any deceased mutant back to life, allowing her to begin her quest to ascend to godhood. This prompts multiple mutant teams to fight against Celine in an attempt to free the newly resurrected mutants. The storyline is notable for reviving a vast majority of its characters.
So you could bring back a whole bunch or even introduce new X-Men and just say like, oh yeah, they died before we started watching the show.
The prominent writers on that were Craig Kyle, Christopher Yost, Mike Carey, and Zeb Wells.
Yep.
I think Inferno would be really cool.
Inferno would be great.
I would love to be like, oh hey, Colossus's little sister is going to come stay with us. They introduce magic and then they do... Magic's great because she came from, you know, do they do some sort of like, shit, I'm spacing on the name of the place that she's from.
Purgatory.
Yeah, it's
Limbo.
Like Limbo. That they use that to introduce Limbo and then unleash all the Limbo goblins on New York.
Okay, so Necrozha. This event.
Yeah.
All right.
What I just read.
You got to the bottom of it.
And what I just described seemed like a huge event, right?
Yeah.
How many issues do you think that it is?
No, I know. It's like maybe 20 issues.
13.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey.
It is 13 issues.
Those are the days.
Meanwhile, Blood Hunt is clocking in at 52 issues.
52, 10 out of 10 issues.
100%. I mean, we don't have Union Jack as a vampire hunter in Necrotia.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
But it's just like, Marvel, can we get back to this? Can we get back to normal events that are huge?
Well,
but so, just 13?
But that event was only in the X line. Like, there was no, like, Avengers Necrotia.
I mean, that's what I mean,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
If that came out today, we would have Avengers Necrotia.
Okay.
We would have,
yeah,
like, Great Lake Avengers Necrotia. Like, it
okay,
would just be
now,
like, every... Howard
talking,
the Duck Necrotia.
You're talking my language, Greg.
And, like, we'd have, like, multiple variants from fucking... You know, Derek Chu and Adam Hughes and like Peach Momoko. And
Adam Hughes, Necrotia.
And it's just like, tell me he can't draw a sexy zombie.
Oh, my boobies are falling off.
Senpai?
Notice my silence during this conversation.
Yeah, anyway.
All right, last thing I've got is the People's Joker is finally kind of getting its like wider theatrical release. Do you know anything about The People's Joker?
Oh, this is the movie that like they've been trying to stop.
Yeah, so I think Warner Brothers had like a cease and desist and they were threatening some of the film festivals being like, we're not going to do any of our movies if you
Well, that's why
include
they had
this.
The fucking Coyote versus Acme. They spent all their money trying to flock this
yeah.
thing.
I can't, but that movie was finished, wasn't it?
Yes.
Finished and revered by everyone that worked
That's
on it.
That's so funny. I can't believe this stuff keeps happening. In any case, people have been excited about this movie. It's a parody of DC characters, and that's how they get away with casting like the Joker and doing the DC kind of iconography surrounding the Joker. An origin story that's different but related to comic book origins of the Joker uses things like a Harley Quinn type in the movie. I think this maybe opens the door for a lot more people to do parodies of these sorts of things and these sorts of characters. And I think that's fair, and it's a good time for that, to be honest. These mm-hmm. characters, when you think about Superman, he's such an icon of pop culture that has been in the zeitgeist of America for nearly 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
he's not above parody and critique.
He's not above parody and critique.
Well,
that is exactly the right point. And I think the Joker falls into that category as well.
Even then. So
the Joker was introduced during in Detective Comics, like,
well, 27.
27. Yeah, it's like the first issue that features Batman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to get into US copyright history, right?
Settle in, folks. We're about to hit
All
a really
right,
good stride.
Let's get a history lesson.
Copyright was originally intended just to protect the author's rights while they were alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Greg can't steal Andy's version of the Joker and make money off of it while Andy's alive, right?
Yeah.
Then fucking Disney came around
mm-hmm.
and they were like, nope, we're going to make all the money for always, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem because in order for these characters to evolve and mature, other people need to be able to take them over aside from a corporate board structure whose only goal is to make money.
Yes, but Andy, if that's the case, then Disney will not make money off those characters.
Yep. You're absolutely correct. But, like,
how will they make their goofy money? Their Mickey bucks.
Like, for example, you could make the argument that there would be no Superman without, like, Peter Pan, right?
I don't think you can make that argument.
I'm saying there's stuff out there
yes,
where, like,
yes.
the characters...
Peter Pan, Batman, we can make that comparison.
Sure. The characters that we know and
Hangs
love today...
Hangs around with kids that are trapped in perpetual adolescence.
Oh, okay.
A weird rogue gallery.
Uh-huh. Tights on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he could
yeah.
use his money to save Neverland, but chooses to... Fight Crime instead?
Hey, Batman Visits Neverland, coming from DC Comics 2025.
This time it's personal. It's kind of like what's happening with like Steamboat Willie and Winnie the Pooh.
I mean, all that stuff, to Mike's point, deserves to be parodied and critiqued, but it also deserves, we deserve to have the ability to expand on those creations that we love.
We could make a better Morbius movie.
100% we could make
a
better
Morbius
movie. I'll
say that for goddamn sure.
We could make a better Madam Web movie, and I volunteer to work with Sydney Sweeney day and night.
Get those lines right.
To make sure that Madam Web 2 is perfect.
And I'll say, too, I acknowledge you got to draw a line somewhere with these characters and their copyrights and stuff like that. But
because there is trademark.
Yeah, right.
We can't ignore that.
But there are some things that have just been around for so long and have infiltrated pop culture so much that it's like, come on, we can't parody the Joker.
It's lower KG.
To your point about like different people with different voices doing things, this is like, they're telling a queer coming of age story in this movie through the fucked up lens of this character that we all can identify with and like have this like baseline knowledge of and make a commentary on that character and his abusive relationship with others.
Yeah.
And like there's a story to be told there. You know, maybe this movie's good, maybe this movie's bad, but I think they've got every right to make the movie, and I'm interested to see it for one.
We need those pop culture shorthands in order to tell those kinds of stories.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
Like elves.
There's a lot of value in that.
Like elves, right? You can just like see somebody with pointy ears holding a bow and be like, oh, that's an elf.
I get some of the mythology. Yeah. I get how they interact with others. Yeah.
You get it's that pop culture shorthand that we need in order to get the point of whatever story you're telling across quickly and easily.
Yes, right. Well said.
Oh, one more thing of news. Two more books have been announced for the Energon universe.
Oh, okay.
We have Destro.
Oh, nice.
Written by Dan Waters.
Oh, I love Dan Waters.
And then we have Scarlet, which I'm very excited about, written by Kelly Thompson.
Okay. Oh, fuck yes.
I don't know either of these, the references from these titles.
Destro is Cobra
Scarlet
Commander's.
Is like the second-hand person to Duke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Destro is the silver one.
He's the second-hand Cobra Commander.
Okay.
Although he would...
Destro's the silver one.
He would probably say that he is in charge.
Well, like, sure.
There's definitely a power struggle between Destro and Cobra Commander.
Yeah, definitely need to kiss.
So these are probably...
Need to fuck it out. They just need a couple of nights together. Really get things right.
Cobra Commandy's done. I can't.
So these are probably in next month's pre-orders.
They are... Yes, the FOC is for next... The FOC is in June. So in the next... previews, you'll be able to do that.
Yep. Okay.
They are mini series, so they're not going to be an ongoing. But
also, are Duke and Cobra Commander. Those are both 5 issues.
Okay. So
which I love.
I think it's the same issue count for those.
Yeah. Sick. I think they're slow drip giving you origin stories before they introduce them into the bigger books.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the slow roll of that thing and not just being like, we're dropping all this shit into a comic book all at once and like didn't earn this like big complex story that it's like, I don't know what's going on as one, maybe a new reader or two, a person who loved this stuff as a kid, but like has lost several of the details throughout the last 30, 35 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I appreciate it at least anyway. And then I can take and leave some of them. Like I don't have to do all of it.
Yeah.
And it's just as fun.
I'm excited for it. As long as one of the G.I. Joes at one point says, who wants a body massage, we're good to go.
I do still really enjoy Void Rivals.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to see them do a little more of that on this.
There has to be a comeuppance with Void Rivals. Like, there has to be a point where these all
smash together.
Meet.
Yeah.
Because this is where it all started. with Void Rivals number one, we got the initial shock that, like, holy shit, Transformers and G.I. Joe are coming back. Like, it seems almost cruel to not bring it back to Void Rivals again to be like, let's finish this story off.
Well, so here's the thing. Void Rivals is on, next month will be what, issue 10?
Mm-hmm.
They've got to do something around issue 12, right? For the first big year, right? And Transformers is finishing up its first arc.
Yeah.
With issue, what, 5 or 6?
Mm-hmm.
When's Daniel jumping off art?
5.
5? They've got to do something soon, is my point.
Yeah. When's their first big crossover?
Yeah.
Where's their big event coming? Because you can, it's on the horizon. Yeah. I can see it.
Yeah.
So.
That's exciting, though.
Oh, and DC finally is finishing their Dawn of DC stuff. Like the new initiative, Dawn of DC, is like
done.
Like it's coming to its sunset. So what comes after this now is like
the brunch of DC.
Yes.
They did announce a thing, didn't they? Like here's what our summer 2024 is going to be.
I forgot what it was. Yeah, I think it was Night Terrors 2.
Terror's Revenge.
Yeah, sleep apnea.
Sorry. No, it's Night Terrors 2, The Scar Giver.
Sleepy time tea. Let's get into some comic
books.
Let's
do it.
Finally.
Andy, lead us off with X-Men.
Oh, me first?
Yeah.
So I didn't read Ronin. I have it in my car. I'll cover it next time. But I read Ultimate X-Men number 1 by writer/artist Peach Momoko. Ever heard of her?
/ cover god.
Yeah. So have no doubt that the art in here is second to none.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to cool it because eventually we will kill Peach Momoko.
Her hands will fall off.
They will fall off and she will not be with us anymore. But this book is great. I was telling Greg before the show that this is just a straight up horror book. It's about armor in, you know, the Ultimate Universe that has been founded. But she is haunted by this spirit of a classmate of hers that was like bullied to death and she didn't stand up for him or with him. And she is discovering her powers as armor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the book. It's not anything close to what I've read in an X-Men book. You know, normally you read X-Men books and even as they introduce new characters, they just have their powers. And then, you know, in their third issue, they'll say, oh, I remember when, and then we like flash back to when they got their powers. This is a character that's like truly discovering their powers in real time, which is nice and refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, you get this like traumatizing story of her past, recent past, that she's having to deal with. So it's very cool, especially given the context that like there are mutants in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Silver Samurai and Spitfire are on council, whatever, that world council.
Mm-hmm.
So mutants exist. But they're not like out and about, you know, Xavier like saving the world yet.
Mm-hmm.
So man, I'm so jazzed to see where this goes. Like this feels so refreshing. Like it feels what I wanted the Ultimate Comics to be, where it's truly an original take on characters that you know and love.
She did this a similar thing with her Demon Days.
Yeah.
Where it was a very manga-inspired story of an American comic book. There's a lot of themes that are darker for American audiences that I think really throw people off when they first started reading it. But when you take it into context of what the story is and what she's trying to tell, it's brilliant. What she's doing with these characters and how she's kind of twisting them into a fashion that she's familiar with and what she probably read growing up.
Yeah.
So it's very cool to see this type of story that I'm used to being told in a different and interesting way.
So Demon Days did a very like blue sky approach to X-Men stuff, where it was like, here are some characters, here are different interpretations of them, but as we introduce you to them, it's not like you've known them their entire lives, and it's not like they've got a backstory that matches other X-Men backstories that you're already familiar with. How do you feel like Ultimate X-Men translates as far as like something you can pick up issue one and start it without knowing much about X-Men?
The only thing I recognized as X-Men from this was when she, the one panel, got her like armor, like when she used her power. That was it. Everything else is completely new and fresh, at least to me. I mean, I guess maybe the like armor heads might read this and be like, oh yeah, this is exactly like the origin story, but like this was something totally unique, totally new, completely accessible because there's nothing like it before.
I love seeing how successful, obviously people love Peach Momoko's covers.
Yes.
That's that, we've said enough about that. A lot of the books that she's done so far, her fan base has really loved. They're, I think, a lot for the art. And then two, it's just like, wow, these books are really fun and really easy to jump into. It's why those books have always been very adjunct, optional reading that exists in an Elseworld. With the new Ultimate line of comic books and this being Ultimate X-Men, not Ultimate New Mutants, not Ultimate some subsect of X-Men.
Yeah.
This is Ultimate X-Men. I think it's really cool that, one, Peach Momoko is doing what I assume is an ongoing book. Does that sound right? And then, two, that Marvel took such a big swing to be like, hey, X-Men is one of our biggest franchises. This person is going to do something holistically different with it, and we're okay with that. Like, I think that was a, I'm really glad that Marvel's took a swing like this with this title.
And just to like give more context here, the story takes place in Japan, contains only one mutant and its armor. You know, Professor X doesn't show up in the last panel and like, okay, now let's go to Massachusetts and meet your classmates. Like, I mean, it's great. It felt like a completely new glass of water.
Also, this book is fucking heavy. Like, the subject matter in here is brutal. And so, like, that, kudos actually to Marvel here for taking a big swing and letting this story be told. Like, it's pretty impressive.
And I'll say, while we say a lot about her work, that this stuff is manga inspired, a lot of times when you say that about a comic book, it's more or less manga. Like, a lot of, and the big publishers do this every once in a while because manga is so popular. There's been a couple Batman books that have been like, here's manga Batman. And you're getting grayscale or straight up black and white. Or if you have color, it's very much that like simplistic line drawing, like sparse dialogue, sort of like action swishy lines and stuff like that throughout that feel like those thick little novella sized manga that you can pick up at any store. Now, this, I think, makes more sense saying manga inspired because her style is really something all its own. Like, I don't open this and think like, oh, it's trying to do a manga thing. It feels like one of a kind or different almost. It's not falling into that trap of being like, oh, this is like almost parody of manga at this point, and because I don't get manga, this book maybe doesn't translate, or maybe it's not for me.
Right.
Because I don't read manga.
Yeah.
I think that's an important distinction about her work. If you're thinking about giving this a shot and maybe haven't read some of her other stuff, I would not say, I'm not going to pick this up because you're not well versed in manga or that style of comic telling.
Yeah.
Of storytelling, sorry.
Yeah. To say it's manga inspired, like Greg pointed out before the show, a lot of manga has a lot more horror element, mm-hmm. even in standard, whatever, non-horror manga, than we as American comic readers are used to. And mm-hmm. this very much leans into that. There's spirits and scary shit kind of just happening to this girl and we don't know why.
Yeah. Like lingering trauma and metaphors and stuff like that. Yeah. It's very, very cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So I would definitely recommend this.
Yeah. And I love the lens of the mutant stuff kind of being like, you know, if someone else was telling this X-Men story, it would be like, my mutant powers are manifesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peach Momoko is doing it in a way that's like, there's something different in me that is powerful and scary. And it's kind of taking it outside of the context of
mutant power.
Well, right?
And it almost flips that idea on its head mm-hmm. because of the character she chose. Mm-hmm. Right. So she's got this trauma that she is trying to block out and forget.
Yeah. And that like manifests as her power.
It manifests mm-hmm. as her power. Yeah. So instead of this thing coming out from her and like blasting out of her eyes, say like a cyclops,
uh-huh. It's protecting her. It's insulating her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She is doing everything she can to keep this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And she is armor.
Yep.
It's awesome. It's so great.
Give me chills.
Yeah. It's a home run.
Yeah, totally.
All the Ultimate books so far, people have loved. They've all had buzz. Every single one of them's ended up on the cover price top 10 list so far. I'm assuming next week this one will probably be at least in the top 20.
I scanned it in CLZ and it's already at $13.
There you go.
Well, 12,000 issues didn't go missing for this, so who knows?
I did get I pre-ordered an issue of Black Panther number 1.
You got it?
And I got it. Ooh. Yeah, I was a little worried it might not show up in the mail.
Crisis averted.
Yeah.
So I read The Last Mermaid by Derek Kirk Kim.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book out on Image about a post-apocalyptic world, and it very much is about the Last Mermaid. She has built herself this mech suit.
So fucking cool.
With a big water bubble in it to like help her find more water to help her survive. And this first issue is kind of we're introduced to the character and her last-ditch effort to find some water because her filtration system is getting dirty and like she needs to find new water to supplement out. And you know, things go haywire. And at the end, we're met with a new mysterious character, whether it be friend or foe. We'll have to wait for an issue 2 to come out. But I'm going to be honest, I was actually shocked by how much I liked this book. You kind of, you know, see this book on the shelf, you go, okay, well, I'll give it a whirl to number 1. I don't know if it's going to really connect with me.
I'll say this book screams off the shelf because it's in a different size and format than a typical comic book. And sometimes I feel like that's a sign that it's like, this isn't good.
Gimmick alert.
People are gonna buy this because they're like, oh, that's weird. Let me see what this is.
Well, I'm here to tell you it is a fantastic story so far. Interesting format, like we talked about. Art is gorgeous. We have Derek here doing writing, illustrating the whole thing.
A real Peach Momoko.
A real Peach Momoko, if you will. So definitely worth your time on that one, The Last Mermaid. I also read Night People, which is a book. It was originally a novel by Barry Gifford. And so this is an adaptation by Chris Condon and Brian Level. It's out on Oni Press. Love all these books out on Oni Press. This is like a kind of natural born killers mixed with some other horror elements.
Oh, I hated natural born killers.
Then you're not going to like this book, my guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I might avoid it. Straight up like that. It was so when they do comics that are based off of books, there is a little bit lost in translation. Because, I mean, a novel's meant for the theater of the mind, if you will. And comic books are very literal and, like, you know, they really want you to see all the things they want you to see. But I feel like this book really succeeded in kind of telling the story and getting us introduced to the characters and the kind of the carnage of it all and getting into the minds of these troubled individuals and kind of their journey through the book.
Well, I think if there's a new writer out there that can do true crime, if it's not Ed Brubaker, it's probably Chris Condon.
It's Chris Condon and did a fantastic job. So, like I said, it smells a little bit of Natural Born Killers or that kind of like two people on the road causing mayhem. So if that's not your cup of tea, I suggest a cup of Ultimate X-Men.
Sure.
Or maybe a glass of Last Mermaid. But I enjoyed it. There's a issue 2 coming up, so I'm excited to see what that has in store. But it definitely is a bit of a heavier, more involved read for readers. And then lastly, I finished it off with What If? Aliens.
I'm so psyched for this.
Do you know
book.
The special part about this series?
Yeah, so it's an alternate ending of Aliens, right?
Yes.
Where Burke lives.
Uh-huh. And what makes
and
this...
And it's written by the guy who played Burke.
Oh, Paul Reiser, right?
Yeah.
It is concept by Paul and Leon Reiser.
That's funny.
And Adam F. Goldberg
and so
Hans
is it
Ronoff.
Paul Reiser and his son?
I believe so.
Okay.
And so they have kind of
that's funny.
Taken on this, and it is funny. Okay, this isn't a dramatic pause. It's fun to me that, and this can't work anywhere else but right here. The fact that Paul Reiser has a say in the What If series about his character from the movie is kind of novel. It's a very fun idea.
Yeah.
I don't see Paul Reiser like sitting at his computer writing out a script or anything, but he probably had an insight into what he thought the character might do had he not died in the movie.
Yeah.
And so to give you some backstory, in the movie, Paul Reiser's character was tasked with bringing back one of the xenomorphs to you know, do whatever.
Do evil stuff.
And then he is ultimately killed in
Friggin'
Aliens.
Friggin' Wayland Corp.
And in this series, he survives and is taken back to Earth, and his life is very mundane. Like he lives as a corporate drone, and he's going to die as a corporate drone of just like going through the rhythms, going into work, clocking in, doing that stuff. And it's kind of it is very conversational heavy. Like that's where I think the Reisners really got into it, of just like, this is the conversation that my character would have in the book.
Yeah, I could speak to his mentality and how he was his patter of speech.
Right.
And yeah.
And so that part was a little tedious for me, but it really kicked off in the final pages where they're gonna go with it, because somehow someone was able to bring a egg back down to Earth and bring it to him. And now he's thinking, it's my time now. Like, I've waited 20 years on Earth for an egg to be brought to me. Now I can, like, make district manager of this company. And so that's where I think it's going to go a little more zanier.
That is cool. So obviously, I also bought this book.
Mm-hmm. He's on Earth?
Yes, because so... In Aliens, you know, they went through the whole thing, and he was, since his character didn't die, he was able to contact Earth and say, hey, come pick me up, like, planned it and goes.
This might be a stupid question, but do all the Alien movies take place off Earth, or are there any that are like...
Yeah, they're all off Earth.
They're all off Earth.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Except for the beginning of Prometheus.
So this... book could pose this
he gets the xenomorphs back to Earth.
What happens if xenomorphs made it to Earth? Like, his death is like the big difference in whether these are unleashed on
Yes.
On Earth. That's really cool.
It's cool too to see the like the macro versus micro of that story, because like the micro version is him being a backstabbing asshole in the movie as a guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the macro is him waiting whatever it is, 20 or 30 years for his next opportunity to like be a selfish bastard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
I love that.
Like no matter the amount of time it takes, he will always be a conniving little fuck.
Yeah.
And he will always be self-serving to get what he wants.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of cool. My only knock is it took a long time to get to that point. I felt like it could have been a little quicker and we could have gotten a little more Xenomorph Earth action in issue one, but I get why they did what they did.
Well, and they're also doing this as a 5-issue mini.
Okay.
Like it's not a one-off issue.
Yeah, true.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But they're, And I feel like they did that because Paul Reiser was like, no, I'm going to write more than one issue. And Disney was like, okay.
Yeah, whatever, Paul. We were not going to do your
mad
about
you. We can put your name
on
the cover. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's the comics that I read this week.
I just wanted to shout out Sunflowers by Keezy Young, which is more of like a zine about having bipolar disorder, and this artist kind of doing a very like autobiographical thing about her struggle through COVID and helping her family and friends understand what it's like for her, that a lot of times mania manifests as something that looks really fun.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is, but most of the time, like, it's very destructive. And I just thought it was a really great read and an interesting peek into this person's life. And if you know anyone that's been diagnosed as bipolar or someone who has manic episodes, I think it's a good, you know, it's one person's insight into that psyche. You know, her take on this could be very different than, you know, someone close to you's take, but I do think it's really interesting to get those peeks in when people are willing to be very vulnerable and tell their stories, and for this one especially to be told in a manner where it's very artful and has a lot of illustration that's kind of abstract in some points, and was just a beautiful telling of that person's life with bipolar disorder. It's on Silver Sprocket, which does a lot of like weirder little indie comics.
Yeah.
This is, like I said, it's kind of like a zine, like micro-sized comic, because it's like a lower print independent comic that has spot gloss on it and is printed on really nice paper. It is more around the like $6 and $7 range, which might be a tough pill to swallow if you're used to getting a big 32 page story for $4.99 to pay, you know, $7 or $8 for something much, much smaller. But if this is your vibe and you like zines and emotional, personal stuff that's illustrated, that's a big recommend for me. This one was very cool.
Is it just like a one and done?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Single standalone thing.
That's a lot easier to swallow for $8.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love that.
Yeah.
Where can I acquire that book?
It was distributed through Previews.
Oh,
so
nice.
Your comic shops can order this for you. And Silver Sprocket likely has it on their website still.
Can't wait to get the variant.
I got mine from Midtown.
The Adam Hughes variant.
Adam Hughes variant. Manic titties.
Quick shout out to Magma Comics. They heard our episode last week about us talking about their preview, and they said thanks for, you know, shouting us out. So they sent us over some PDFs of their issues, so when we can talk about them, talk about them on our episodes.
Nice. Awesome.
So that'll be fun.
Hell yeah. Dope.
And Planet Comic Con, like we mentioned earlier, is this weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you want some exclusive con content, go to our Patreon. We have a free section, and we have a paywall as well. Patreon.com/FirstIssueClub. We'll be posting updates on there all weekend. Hopefully we get to talk to some cool people. And if you're in the Kansas City area, hopefully we get to see you there.
Yeah.
Come high five us.
Yeah, we're gonna be at a table. We haven't mentioned this yet, right? We're gonna be at a table with Boulevard Brewery.
On Saturday.
On Saturday from noon to 2:00, and then 3 to 4 we'll be at our table. And we're gonna be doing comic book clairvoyant tarot readings. So based on your pop culture interests, we're kind of doing a tarot style reading to help predict the right new comic book for you to check out. So I think especially fun for newcomers and people. I thought we fit really well with like a beer thing, which might be a little more of a friendly, attracting thing to people who are like checking out pop culture conventions, but don't feel so comfortable being in like the real nerd stuff. It's like, well, here's where some of the bros are hanging out.
Well, here's the mystic stuff.
And and we'll ease you into it. You can tiptoe into it with First Issue Club. So that's kind of like our little fun.
We're here to help you.
Fun outreach.
We've opened our third eye to guide you into your next comic book obsession.
Yeah, that's right. So
we are Doctor Strange, seeing the millions of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And we'll direct you to the correct one.
Yeah. On all of them lead to fun.
That's right.
But yeah, if you're a listener, come find us and tell us, because we'll probably bring like stickers and things. And
I got stickers and buttons all ready to go.
Right on. Love it.
I think that's all we have for this episode, unless anyone else has anything else to say.
I think we did a great job.
I think we did a great job as well.
Thank you.
Mike D., take us out.
Bye. First Issue Club is edited and produced by Mike DeStacy, Greg Lichtig, and Andy Vargas. Follow us on social media at First Issue Club, and check out our Patreon for videos, audio, and more at patreon.com/firstissueclub.